Brewhouse Show is proudly hosted by FeedPress, a simple, intuitive, and powerful RSS analytics and podcast hosting platform. With FeedPress, I'm able to see how many people are subscribed to this show and how many have downloaded each episode. FeedPress automatically publishes your new content to social networks such as Twitter and Facebook, and even has an integrated newsletter. They also take care of optimizing our feed for iTunes, and with a rolling 250 megabytes of flexible file storage per month and a slick drag-and-drop interface, we can easily upload 4 episodes of the Brewhouse Show per month. FeedPress now serves more than 30 million requests per month and is trusted by many popular blogs and podcast networks such as GoodStuff.fm, ESN.fm, Mule Radio, The New Disruptors, Beautiful Pixels, Inessential, MacGasm, my friends Ben and Steven at The Brooks Review and 512pixels.net, and of course, The Brewhouse Show. If you've got a podcast or a blog and want to get to know your audience better, sign up for a free 14-day trial with no contracts or commitments at feed.press. When your trial is up and you're totally convinced of just how awesome FeedPress is, use promo code Brewhouse during checkout to get 10% off your first year. Our thanks to FeedPress for hosting The Brewhouse Show.
Funny, it looks like I'm talking to you, and I can see your head poke out of a mic. It's like, hello, Pat Mike. Welcome to the Brewhouse Show. I'm here with Pat Mike.
Hey, Cal Mike.
And those of you that are probably wondering what the hell that means, it's because I'm looking at Pat. And his head's poking out of a mic.
Through a microphone.
He's told me that I'm supposed to put the mic up to my nose.
We had to get it close.
And it's...
Prevent the bleed.
And now it works.
The audio bleed.
So, yes, welcome to the Brewhouse Show.
Hi.
And we're running a little late today because we had an interesting mix-up with the rooms here in the Vancouver Library. But that's partly... it's all our fault.
Entirely our fault.
We just found out that we were supposed to come in a specific amount of time, otherwise they give away a booking.
Actually, if I were to blame someone other than us, which is sort of my thing, I would say that it's actually probably Paolo and Lana's fault.
Yes, completely blame them.
Because they took it upon themselves to cook a delicious turkey lunch. Turkey stuffing, gravy.
So, yeah, no, earlier on the week, Lana comes to me and she says, hey, it'd be a good idea. Thanksgiving weekend's coming up, and we should have some sandwich, like a turkey dinner. And I'm like, no, it's going to be too elaborate thing. Let's just have some sandwiches, and that'll be enough. Turkey sandwiches, sit some cranberry, some stuffing in there. But no, it ended up being like Paolo, like what was the sous vide kind of cooking style? Yeah. And so he vacuum sealed, cooked the turkey.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what? Yeah, and it was amazing. Yeah, so we're a little late. We had a good little lunch.
Of course, you're not going to know this because we're recording it, releasing it.
That's very true.
But we're recording this 3 days after we launched.
That's right.
We released the show a few days ago, episode 00 on transparency. We've got some good feedback from people. Part of the process this afternoon was actually responding to some of the critical feedback on our audio quality, wanting to make improvements there. So hence the improved mic positioning.
Hopefully. We don't know.
Yeah, we'll find out.
This room, we're in a much bigger room this week.
This is a huge space. This is the video recording studio.
Yeah, we've got a green screen behind us. So we should have recorded this and put some elaborate background in there and be like, yeah, we're in the Bahamas recording this edition. There's a separate room for the mixer and everything. So we've had to try and learn sign language, which ended up just being, let's just phone each other.
Just phone each other. Good old technology, the telephone.
Yeah. So what are we talking about today, Pat?
Today we are going to be talking about content. We've been talking a lot as a team about things, writing. How do you pitch a product? How do you design a product? How do you develop a product? And a lot of it really boils down to writing. And so we've been working on an idea for the last, the idea has been around since before I joined the team. But Paolo, our recently hired developer, has taken it on to build upon it. And now we're looking at ways that we can actually turn it into a proper product. And you showed me yesterday some work that you were doing on writing a pitch in a way, but it was more. I actually liked how you were approaching it. You were writing it from the perspective of the product itself, and answering the question, what are you hiring me, the product, for? You were essentially answering that question. Again, from the perspective of the product.
Well, yeah, again, it kind of morphed into the product being a person. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't drunk doing it. But so content, I think what I found myself naturally doing, and I think this is partly because of the startup world, whenever I had an idea, right, like I had this Evernote collection of ideas, so I'd go to the ideas tab and I need to dump down the idea that I'd have.
Yep.
You know, so years ago, I'd be like, you know, let's stick with the next Uber theme, right? Like, so I'd be like, hey, you know, I'm going to build this Airbnb for Uber or whatever, you know, that kind of idea. And I'd write it down and then I'd walk away. You know, yeah, I've logged this idea. This is the concept. But then I quickly learned that no. Like, I had a lot of other things in my head at the time. Yeah. I need to dump that down. So then at some stage I'd end up doing a pitch deck, you know, almost like a real quick, like 10 slide format of like what the market opportunity is, what the, you know, how do we get the distribution? How do we get the whatever? Like, kind of nail down some points there. And why? Because then it helps me filter that idea and kind of accelerate a little bit further along. Is this a concept that we should invest time in or not? Right. And then I'd go back to that and keep adding notes in certain areas as and when I'm on the train, when I'm walking around late at night, I need something, I just add to it. And then what I end up doing is just writing it down. It's just words. Mm-hmm. It's content.
Yep.
It's not visual. It's not pictures. It's not links. It's just words. And then what I've quickly learned is that actually what I end up doing, and I think even like Trevor, when I was working with Trevor back at Caliper, you know, he did this as well. It's like, let's start with a landing site. Let's talk about like, what should the landing site look like? So this 10 slides format morphed into, let's just write down, you know, headline, kind of what it is, pitch it as though you're building the landing site for it. And like, I'm coming to it, but it just with words.
Yep.
So, and then I think this week, why it came up so much, it was just a number of different things. It was this, we're doing this new site for this product we're going to launch. We're talking about, you know, revising Goodbit's landing site. And we're talking about the redesign of that. And we're talking about how do we go around it. And then, listening to Work in Progress, actually, Jason Fried and I forgot the other chap's name.
I'll look it up.
Yeah. Gracefully every day they record, podcast. It's actually a video cast, I guess. Is that the way to go? I don't know.
It started as an audio podcast and it's morphed into a video podcast. Yeah.
Right.
They basically do a Google Hangout.
I found out that it's published on SoundCloud, by the way. So I need to figure out if we can subscribe to SoundCloud because we download 300 meg of video, but I don't watch the video. I just listen to the audio. But anyway, the podcast, Work in Progress,
which features Jason Fried and Nate Contry.
That's right.
Contney.
Sorry, Nathan.
Sorry, Nate.
Big error there.
So you're listening. You were listening.
So I was listening to the one of the. I'm actually listening to all the previously recorded ones. They're just the gems, all of them.
Yeah, the back catalog.
Yeah, I'm just like, I've downloaded all of them and just been slowly listening to them. And one of them, Jason explained his process around doing a landing site, or to how they're coming up with a new Basecamp feature they want to put down. He said, like, he starts with a text document. He shared his screen. So for the first time, I started looking at the video, pulled it out of the pocket, started looking at it, and he literally did that similar process with just different concept, different way of storytelling. Like the headline, I think he had it, you know, why, I think he was getting into the why a lot quicker.
Yep.
And trying to, you know, just determine like what is and why they're doing the idea, and then what it is. So then that's where you explain what the product is, how it connects to the why. And then the pitch is what it ends up of, which is kind of like that closing note in the sense that, you know, landing page design, you'd have a call to action or whatever, right? So, and then I was like, yeah, this is that. Let me try that. So then I ended up writing. So we're building a product. It's probably worth explaining a little bit about the product because it would make more sense. We're building a little Slack bot to do roundups. Mm-hmm. So you can tell this bot what you did today, and then tomorrow, we call him Roger. He'll do the roundup and post it out on a separate channel. It used to be done over email, but Paolo has been working really hard to make it work with Slack, and we're like, wow, this is so much more
From that change, we made the change about 2 weeks ago, I think, now. Yeah. And we've just seen that the on the team, the use of Roundup Roger has just skyrocketed. Like, pretty much almost every day now, almost everyone is using it, whereas before, you know, a couple people might use it here and there. It just felt a lot more disjointed when it was in email, when 95% of our communications are happening through Slack, or at least being collected in Slack through other means.
Yeah, you're completely right. It's actually extraordinary how much of a change it is. Mm-hmm. I'm shocked, I guess, to a certain extent, and like, wow, like people are more responsive to talk on Slack than they are to talk over email. That is a perfect sign to show that, you know, well, email is dying, right? Like, no one will interact with that. They'll probably be like, yeah, I'll reply to that later. But then the Slack, the transient element, that's the short form of it, the where the device at which they're interacting with it, it's mobile, it's in chat form.
I was going to say, too, it's not lost in a sea of... email is very different from something like Slack, where email, there's a single column essentially of all of your messages, regardless of who they're from. Whether that's, you know, your best friend or the junk mail that you get, you know, because you signed up for a product 3 weeks earlier. And that's where that email was living, and to engage with that required, you know, again, going through email. Slack is different because it's grouped by conversation, or it's organized by conversation.
It's context.
And so you can actually bring to the forefront or surface the request for the roundup, which we send out every day at 5. Send that request, and it's just one little notification icon on the Roundup Roger.
It's hitting the bang, like, channel. Yeah, like you have a channel, roundups, that's now like, that's where you go to see the roundup.
Yep.
And when it's message awaiting, you know that there's something there. Whereas in email, it's lost in the inbox. Totally agree. But getting back to rewind back to the content element. So we're building the landing site for it because we want to open it up to some friends in town and some people that we know use Slack in this way. And we want to just see if they find this useful to them. Mm-hmm. And so we're building the landing site for it. So I started writing the what it is. Why do people need this? Mm-hmm. And it took a bit more of an approach. And then it became, to get back to your original kind of question, is like, then it started getting to, hi, I'm Roger, you know, and then it's like, actually, hi, I'm Roger. I'll do your roundup with some simple Slack messages, you know. And then I was like, you know, playing with this kind of, just tell me your Slack API key. So I'm explaining how he works by himself. So it's like, you know, I want your Slack API key. And you know, don't worry, I won't spam your team kind of thing and make it a little bit playful. Mm-hmm. And then you start creating a persona. But then I'm experimenting to see if that approach of content will get the message across more versus the, this is product, will do X. Yep. This is your pain. These are the features, you know, does this connect with you? And I think the reason for my drive there was because if you start thinking of the personality and the role of doing the roundup and making it personable, it connects with the users in a different way. Yeah. So, you know, making him feel like someone real, like Roger, kind of perhaps it creates this little bond that, hey, Roger, I'll tell you what I did today, or I want you to tell my team, because it feels a little more real than a service, like a tool.
And this whole idea of having almost character-driven conversational user interface patterns. I mean, one of the early ones that I remember experiencing was Clippy from the Microsoft Word. Obviously,
isn't that what everyone talks about when they say they don't want a Clippy? It's like, and that's funny. That's not where we are, right?
In a lot of ways, yeah. I mean, I think part of that is actually because Clippy was its purpose was to explain in a rather complicated visual graphical user interface, whereas what we're talking about essentially is the conversation is the interface where you're setting up your account, you're hooking up your Slack API, your, you know, whatever all other setup and account management type things is more, we're approaching it from a more conversational approach, again, because we're kind of framing the product less as a product and more as a character.
Yeah.
And that's really,
yeah.
Obviously it's not perfect for every product, but the idea is that you discovered that not through an exploration of visual ideas or even development ideas. Nope. It was purely a result of the writing process.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And it was also then thinking about who it's trying to tell the message to and understanding the people that might be reading it. And you know, and that's the great thing. You remove the cloud of color and style and, you know, and everything else. And I think, you know, it just now it makes you look at the words and how short it is, how long it is. You know, do I need to say some or that word some? Do I not need to put that word in there?
Exactly.
And it's super interesting when you read it. So I spent a whole afternoon, it was like probably a couple of hours, just on this one piece of text in Evernote, right?
Right.
And it's like I felt really bad telling Randall Roger that day. It's like, yeah, I just wrote some paragraphs of text.
For you, but
I was wondering how the team was going to perceive that. Like, Cal, so you wrote a paragraph of text? Oh, nice. You did a lot that afternoon.
But there's so this is something that I've been thinking about for a long time now. Last week we mentioned 37 Signals, artist formerly known as 37 Signals, now Basecamp. Their blog Signal versus Noise has been around for some time now. They've written about writing for a long time, and one of the more poignant posts on this topic was written by Jonas Downey, who wrote back in November of 2014. It was a post called Writing First Design. And he talked about essentially how the common approach to designing an interface when you're first starting out or a product or a website or what have you is to fire up the Photoshop file or fire up a sketch file and start moving boxes around, throwing in some lorem ipsum text and just going that approach. His argument is that as a designer, it actually shows a maturity to start just with plain text. The best approach I've found for myself, at least, is to crack open a new text file. I use an app called NVAlt, which is Brett Terpstra's fork of Notational Velocity.
It's more geekier than what I use. It's kind of surprising.
Right? Like, we have a little role reversal app.
Yeah, here. I'm like, hang on a minute. This is really complex.
It's just a very simple text-based, purely text-based interface. But the point is that it just as you described, it frees me from the distraction of what will this button look like or what will this paragraph of text look like. It divorces the content from the presentation. And actually getting back to sort of like the early foundations of things like web standards, the divorce of content and presentation is fairly fundamental to that. I've taken this approach myself where I will start, I will try to and I've done this in a variety of different ways. Another approach that I believe it was Ryan Singer from Basecamp mentioned writing out these user flows where on the top you have draw a line and on the top of the line you write what the user sees and on the next line you write what the user does or what the user can do.
Yeah.
And again, it's just a purely that one has a little bit more in terms of like just, you know, has some arrows and stuff from element or from flow to flow, but it's purely about the writing because essentially, you know, when it boils down to it, interface design is about connecting the intentions and motivations of a human being to the inputs and outputs of a computer, algorithms or interface. And humans speak written languages.
That's true. Yeah. And I think, you know, we do this all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you know, the design ethos of like, we naturally pick up the knife and know how to mm-hmm. do it. But if you dissect that, it's mm-hmm. like, no, we go to the drawer, we pull the drawer, which is pulling the handle. There's yep. a handle. Where's the knife? This is the knife. Do I touch the metal? Do I touch the wood? Like, there's all these things that happen, right? But then, you know, that interaction and that wording that, explaining that mm-hmm. and codifying that to like make someone follow that process if yep. they haven't done it before in the first time, super interesting. And you've got to start with the description. You've got to start with content, right?
That's right.
And I think content, like, we're talking about content in a whole, right? Content mm-hmm. matters in design. We talked about that just now. We talked about content matters in, you know, landing site design, mm-hmm. getting a message across. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, blogging, right? You mm-hmm. know, let's mention it, but let's talk about that. And, you know, it matters, you know, people always talk about blogging and it's like the content is key, right? Mm-hmm. Content is king, I think is yep. the line, right? And it's by, you know, focus on why you're writing the content for yourself and getting mm-hmm. and getting that continued theme, the content right. theme. And it's true, right? Like, I could read blogs and then, you know, people get carried away with widgets mm-hmm. and newsletter pop-ups and all this other nonsense. But really, it's like, what am I reading and why am I reading it? And is it of value to me? What's the content, right? And I'm a big fan of blogs that are simple, and it's, and I'm glad for things. Again, we're going to make a shout out to Medium again in this podcast, that, you know, it's the content, right? It's like, here's the text. It's eligible. The typography, you know, being designed so that it's good to easy to read, mm-hmm. digest. There's a time at the top to tell you about the content, but it's content, right? It's that matters. Right. You're following someone's theme and insights around a specific topic. But like, what else, Pat? Like, you know, if content, you know, matters in the world, I mean, what else have you seen as examples of content being a use or an importance in a specific area?
So, actually, I was just, as you were describing that, I was actually pulling up a piece that a developer named Marco Arment.
Yep.
He's one of the co-founders of Tumblr. He founded and sold Instapaper. He's just today released his new version of his podcasting client, Overcast.
Okay, yep.
And a number of other things. But one of the things he also does is he writes a blog. He's fairly prolific in what he's written. The things he's written have been picked up by CNBC and a variety of other media. And he's just, you know, one indie developer in New York kind of thing. And he is a little bit of an outlier in just that, you know, he's seen a tremendous amount of success. I would almost dare to say that a great deal of that has to do with his writing. And he had a post back in 2010 called How I Write and Time Manage. And he references a talk that actually Merlin Mann, whom I mentioned before, and a writer named John Gruber, who writes a website called daringfireball.net. They did a talk back in around that time called from South by Southwest 2009, excuse me. It was called How To, 149 Surprising Ways to Supercharge Your Blog with Credibility. Which, if you know John Gruber or Merlin Mann, whether personally or simply through their work, that title was definitely a rib, definitely a play, just kind of a joke. But one of the things that John spoke about was audience. And his ideal audience, and the way that he's approached writing Daring Fireball, which he's now done full time, I believe for almost a decade, is he visualizes his sort of what he calls a sort of optimal reader, which essentially is a facsimile of himself, someone who appreciates the same things he does, who would be interested in the sort of nitty-gritty details of things like user interface design and Mac development, iPhone development, and such. And then the reason I bring up Marco is because he actually kind of continue on with that idea, and he said that his ideal reader at the time, was John Gruber as well. And it was interesting because at the time, I was a part of this sort of small community of tech nerds who were, you know, into like Mac development and design, and then when the iPhone obviously came out, getting into that side of things as well. A lot of people were kind of writing in a way that you could sort of sense that they were all kind of going for that same thing. And some of it, simply the sort of the cream rose to the top because you could tell who was authentic in that.
Right.
And the people that were authentic were the ones who actually understood who their audience was, who actually understood, who they were writing for, because it focused their writing.
It's true. I mean, but then the only thing I could add to that, and just not that I'm not going to criticize those specific writers because they are great people and they write. But so most of the time they get that way because they write for themselves, right?
Yep.
Like, you know, and it just happens to be they associate with the audience that is similar people, right? And you know, it's super interesting that, you know, if you remove again. Like the variables, the decision, the KPIs, whatever that bullshit, and just say to you, you know, what am I writing? Mm-hmm. What are the words? Why am I writing that? How do I storyfy that? How do I explain it? The content. And it's super interesting. And just as you was talking, actually, it just reminded me of like Twitter, 140 characters. Like
another great example of a place where
you have to think about what you're writing, right? Like how you put those words together and what words.
Yes.
And why.
It requires wit and
emojis.
When you and I joined Twitter, which I imagine was probably around the same time, emojis
was it? I don't know. When did you join?
I joined around 2007, late 2007, early 2008.
Are we going to look up who joined?
Well, now I've deleted my account a few times, so I don't have a record. I know. Yeah. I did the old, or not the old. Actually, I feel like I was a maverick in the deleting my Twitter account.
I am Twitter user 10,952,562.
I was around that.
So yeah, about the
around. I was probably like more closer to the 11 or 12 million, somewhere in there. But roughly that time, I wasn't like user number billion or whatever they're up to now. Although I am probably that now. But anyway, it requires like I said, wit. It requires self-editing, and it requires, again, deciding who your audience is and being almost, at least the people whom I follow that are sort of super, you would almost call them Twitter celebrities, are the people who are super focused. So I think of people like, I follow a couple of comedians. One is a woman named Avery Edison, who's from Britain. Another one is the account, I forget the name of the writer, but he's a writer. He was a writer for The Daily Show. If he's not still, the user account though is, The Tweet of God, which is, a very, again, very focused,
just as a quick tangent.
Yeah.
Who else would you recommend on Twitter?
Like, who else would I recommend?
Yeah. Who do you read like as like things you follow and kind of go?
I always have to recommend my friend James Shelley, because the way he thinks about a lot of most things,
and we'll put these in the show notes.
Yep, absolutely. Right? Yeah. Which can be found at brewhouse.io/show.
Yes, that's right. We have a landing site now.
That's right. So James Shelley @James Shelley, at Patrick Roan is another one.
Isn't that at Cal really good guy?
He's okay. He posts a lot of spam. in my experience.
Yeah. He tends to do that.
And his punctuation is often
grammar's terrible.
Yeah. So, which is odd for a Brit. I would have figured that they would have like
had a master class. Why do people think that, like, you know, people kind of go
from England, people from England can like, speak
we
English?
No, like England English.
You guys tongue. Invented it.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean we know how to speak the best. If you go and travel north in England, and I'm sure you'll realize that there's a lot. Anyway, going back to the Twitter handles, anyone else? Just quickly off the
top. There's a bunch of them. I can't think of any.
It's funny though. Like, I used to follow a lot of people on Twitter that was like insightful tweets, links to posts, and now it's almost entertainment, right? Because I'll hear about things
Well, it's a lot of self. It's a lot of self marketing right now.
Yeah, it's just
voice. I've done this thing, and that's sort of where I was getting at. The people that I mentioned are generally, they're not the only people I follow, obviously, and they're not even necessarily the best people I follow, though I'm not sure how you would gauge that. The key, though, is that those are examples of accounts where their primary focus is on sort of expository or even comedic writing that has a fairly narrow and specific audience because they know they know what they want to say and they know who to whom they want to say it.
The only person that comes to mind that does a good job of like putting the words together like my mind, because you said comedy, it like jumped to mind that it's funny. Is the startup L. Jackson?
Oh yeah,
yeah. That's so that he's hilarious, or whoever he is.
Yes.
I'm sure some people in the Bay Area know who he is or she is, but it's hilarious. And then there's the fake, or is it the bored Elon Musk that Mark always?
Yeah, I've seen that one as well.
Mark just retweets the good ones, I believe, and I get to see them. But
that's why I don't follow those ones, because I just let the people.
But they're short. They're really like selective in the way they could put the words together, and they get the message across.
Yeah.
So content matters, right? And I think, you know, we want to keep this podcast a little short, also because we're probably going to get kicked out. Send your comments to @Calv or @Pat Drybera.
That's right. We won't spell it this time again. It'll be in the show notes.
Drybera. Just quickly to end the show though. Mm-hmm. Is what's interesting this week? What have you seen this week that's cool?
So a couple days ago, I was listening to a podcast, and actually I re-listened to it last night. A great podcast called Design Details, which is part of the spec.fm podcast network. It's a podcast network specifically geared towards designers and developers, which is pretty fantastic. I forget the name of the hosts of the show. You'll have to forgive me for that. But the episode specifically was an interview with a product design director, I should say, named John Lax. Now, I have to mention that this may be a biased opinion simply because I believe, if I'm not mistaken, John is in fact Canadian. In his office, his previous gig as one half of the partnership of Tehin and Lax, which was a well-known design and product design agency out of Toronto, and again, very prolific due to a great deal of their infamy or what have you is the fact that they wrote a lot and they wrote very well. But my point is the interview with John Lax on Design Detail Podcast. Link will be in the show notes, brewhouse.io/show, and Design Details, John Lax.
I'm gonna check that out.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
What about yourself?
I mentioned
no work. Tesla.
No more. Let me find something else really expensive. Like this big yacht that I saw early on today.
Really?
Yeah. It was, you know, like it had a like helicopter on it. It was like, yeah. No. I think
we could put a yacht behind the green by the green screen.
Actually,
here.
Yes. That'd be sweet. We're on a boat. Yeah. this week, I think it's an oldie, actually. I think the thing that I'm going to probably say is cool is something that probably most people have seen. Steve Jobs. Some feed, it came up again. His video of him handling an insult when he came back to Apple.
Oh, really?
I forgot what year it is now. Where, you know, I think he was shutting stuff down that fans of Apple really loved. Like, I think it was OpenDoc where he shut it down and, somebody asked a really harsh question to him and, you know, it was pretty harsh. I mean, like, it was almost rude. It was like, where have you been for the last 7 years kind of thing. And it's just fascinating to watch him work, his mind tick over and handle probably his temper, his panache, his thinking, his professionalism. And how, and ego and everything, and he just, he handles it really well, and you know, he touches on points that like, you know, a number of points in just like 5 minutes. It's things like, you know, nobody's perfect. Everyone will always think of things differently. You can't please everyone. Have to make decisions to move forward, and the decisions might be incorrect. And you know, and that's what I have to do. So, and you know, and he start, and it, you could hear the crowd almost coming around to his line of thinking, and then all of a sudden the applause gets louder and louder, and it's like, okay.
I think I remember this video now that you're describing it. Yeah,
I was just
it
like,
was fairly,
and it's 5 minutes. I will put it in the show notes to dig it up, and like, it's just it's watching. Mm-hmm. That's you know, moving people's minds along, like as a leader, but more importantly, like getting over yourself mm-hmm. and thinking about like. The future, the dream, and actually making it happen.
Philippe and I were talking, or he was describing very briefly to me over lunch, another video that Steve did. It was a demo of, like, I believe the Mac.
Yeah.
And he was talking, you know, he's just describing how, like, he would speak to the audience and looking at the camera, and then he would turn to face the computer, and then the scene would change to be a front-facing view of the computer. So essentially you shifted from looking at Steve Jobs to looking from the perspective of Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
I wonder, I think that was almost his best quality, was his ability to help to make, to enable you to see through his eyes, those exact types of things where he could shift your perspective to see things his way. And that really boils down to, understanding your message and understanding your audience.
Yeah, bit about content, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
See how I brought that all around?
Yeah, I see that. Yeah. And on that, thank you very much for listening. Mm-hmm. Thanks to those who listened the first time around.
That's right.
We had about 100 subscribers in our first week, which was
not bad.
First couple of days, actually. But yeah. Please do share this podcast if you mm-hmm. found it interesting. If you didn't, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. sorry for eating half an hour of your time. but we'll be doing it again next week.
That's right.
And we'll be having a guest on the show next week.
Ooh.
We'll leave it at that. Thank you very much. I hope your Thanksgiving went well this weekend in Canada. I think it's the Thanksgiving. It is.
That's right. Thanksgiving. It is Thanksgiving this weekend.
Yeah.
Do you even know what that is as a Brit? Yeah. You
guys no. I will not say anything. It will probably come across in the wrong way. Yeah, because I asked for the history lesson in the office, but people kind of were like blank.
Yeah,
me,
we
right?
didn't really know.
Yeah.
Again, I'm second generation. My grandparents moved here like 100, not even 100 years yeah. ago. So
anyway, but we can talk about that for almost now because we ended up talking about like where do people originally come from. It spiraled out of control quite quickly. And then ended up being like gorillas and Lucy in Africa and mm-hmm. Migrations. Anyhow, super interesting stuff. All right, thank you very much. And that's the end of it.
The Brewhouse Show is brought to you in part by GoodBits, helping you and your team collect, curate, and share the best content in the world. With GoodBits, you and your team can collect all of the great things you've found throughout the week, manually using our browser extensions and automatically using our Slack, Buffer, and blog integrations. When you're ready to put together your latest issue, curate the best content using our beautiful drag and drop builder. You can add headers and descriptions to group content into sections and edit each link's description to let your readers know why you think they should know what you know. Once your issue is complete, you can send it through MailChimp, Campaign Monitor, or directly through GoodBits itself. Each issue is also published to your own landing page, where new readers can see what you're sharing and sign up once they see how awesome you and your team really are. Sign up for a free account today, and you and two collaborators can start collecting, curating, and sharing the best content to up to 200 subscribers. Do you have more than 200 people on your subscriber list? Do you want to work with a team of up to 5 collaborators and use awesome premium templates to make your issues really stand out? Sign up for the GoodBits Pro plan for just $19 a month when you sign up for a year. Now, as I was writing this little advertisement, I decided to help those of you who are listening to this show and who would like to become GoodBits Pros by creating a coupon code for you. Thing is, I haven't told Calv yet. So if you'd like to upgrade to GoodBits Pro, use the offer code NobodyTellCalv and upgrade by October 31st to get 15% off your first year. And make sure you do so by October 31st because the only thing scarier than Halloween is your boss finding out you're giving discounts away to your podcast pals. To learn more about GoodBits, check out goodbits.io And don't forget coupon code NobodyTellCalv for 15% off your first year of GoodBits Pro.